Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
We're back for another edition of Drive Time Sports. And it's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I am thrilled to be back with you. Yesterday, we started our preparation for Super Bowl 53 by bringing in Jim Everett, former Los Angeles Rams quarterback. Now, if you missed that, no problem. You can head on over to CastleCountryRadio.com, click on the Drive Time Sports link. You can listen to that complete interview. He joined us for two segments yesterday. We are going to continue our preparation for Super Bowl 53 today, and I'm really excited for today's guest, Leonard Marshall. Name sounds familiar? It should. Won two Super Bowls with the New York Giants under coach Bill Parcells. Defensive coordinator on that Giants squad was Bill Belichick. And Leonard Marshall is also known for his hit in the 1990 NFC Championship game as he knocked Joe Montana out in the fourth quarter. The Giants went on to prevent the three-peat from San Francisco. They went on to the Super Bowl where they beat the Buffalo Bills 20-19. Leonard Marshall is going to join us over the phone in just a bit as we continue our guests for Super Bowl 53. That's not all. Today we're going to talk some local sports as well. Tonight it is Fan Appreciation Night at the BDAC, and we're going to be joined by Coach Jones and Coach Vando with the USU Eastern Men's Squad. We'll preview tonight's game against Salt Lake Community College. Live action is going to begin at 5 p.m., immediately after Drive Time Sports. We're going to send you out to the BDAC. Sonny Buscarini will be standing by to give you the play-by-play call. The women's game, I'm going to join the booth after the women's game, take over for the men's game. So, we have a very busy day coming up here on Drive Time Sports. I'm looking forward to it. And while I'm at it, let me throw out tomorrow's guests. I'm thrilled. New England Patriots running back James White will join us over the phone. Backup quarterback Brian Hoyer will also join us. Got some great questions for Brian. What's it like being Tom Brady's backup? That'll be on the show tomorrow. And if you're a Denver Bronco fan, you definitely don't want to miss this. Steve Atwater, all-time Denver Bronco great. He is on tap to join us tomorrow as well. We have the guests rolling in from the national sports front as we prepare for Super Bowl 53. So a lot going on there. Let's take a look at the national sports headlines. And we will begin in the NBA, where I was a little bit stunned today to see a trade go down. The Dallas Mavericks have agreed to a trade with the New York Knicks involving all-star forward Kristaps Porzingis. KP is on the move. The Knicks and Mavericks have scheduled a trade call with the league office to finalize the deal. This was first reported on Twitter by Adrian Wojnarowski, and also Shams was, he's on it. Everything, these two, they battle back and forth. Here's what the trade involves. Dennis Smith Jr. is the centerpiece of the package. He's going to New York, along with Wesley Matthews and DeAndre Jordan, who both have expiring contracts and could be buyout candidates right now. They're going to the Knicks. Trey Burke, former Utah Jazz man, averaging about 12 points per game, he's headed to the Mavericks along with Porzingis, and then some salary dumps with Courtney Lee and Tim Hardaway Jr. The Mavs are also working to acquire a first-round pick to include in the deal going to New York. So they would be giving the Knicks a first-round pick. They owe their own protected first-rounder to the Atlanta Hawks. That was part of the Luka Doncic deal. But Knicks fans are losing their mind on Twitter. And I got to be honest with you, I don't hate this for the New York Knicks. And the reason why I don't hate it is because the Knicks were not serious contenders for Anthony Davis. The Pelicans are going to move Davis to the Lakers. It's just a matter of time. So if you are New York, you have a 14% chance of landing Zion Williamson in the draft. You have $75 million, up to $75 million in cap space this offseason. I mean, that is huge. That's two max contracts. And the Knicks are so far away that I actually like this trade. I think the Knicks did okay today. And if you can get two first-rounders out of it, you knock it out of the park. And again, DeAndre Jordan's going to get bought out. Wesley Matthews is not coming back next year. You get Dennis Smith Jr., nice little centerpiece. I think this kid's athletic. A lot of people were mentioning him in the same breath as Lonzo Ball a couple of years ago in the draft. I think the Knicks did okay. Now, the Mavericks, yeah, the Mavericks did just fine because now you have Porzingis to team up with Luka Doncic. And even if you can't sign Porzingis long-term, you have Doncic and money. So I think the Mavericks knocked it out today as well. But it does tell me that the Lakers and Pelicans are inching closer to a deal. And I haven't heard anything in that regard. It's just me putting the pieces together. The Lakers, it was reported by Adrian Wojnarowski earlier today that the Lakers and the Pelicans have talked trade, and it looks as if the Lakers are prepared to offer a package that would include Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, and Ivaka Zubac, along with a first-round pick. The Pelicans would be nuts to turn that down. And if you're the Lakers, you make that trade in a heartbeat. Don't care about the kids. Don't care about it. Don't care about growth. You make that trade. Right now, you make that trade. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA tonight. There's plenty of action, and it will begin at the 5 o'clock hour. We get the Dallas Mavericks on the road taking on the Detroit Pistons. Tonight, the Orlando Magic will play host to the Indiana Pacers. Milwaukee will travel on the road to meet Toronto, 6 p.m. start time there. That game is on TNT. 6:30 tonight, Spurs will welcome in the Nets. Philadelphia will travel to Golden State, second game on TNT. Start time for that one is set for 8:30 p.m. And also tonight at 8:30, the Lakers taking on the Clippers. That's a quick look at what's happening to the national sports front. Again, plenty to get to on this Thursday edition. It's Thursday already of Drive Time Sports. Again, coming up, Coach Vando and Coach Jones of the USU Eastern men's basketball team, a local sports recap, and we'll catch up with two-time Super Bowl champ and New York Giant legend Leonard Marshall. It's all coming up on this Thursday edition of the show, live from the Auto Farm Studios. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with the boys' high school basketball scene, where we had two very intriguing games last night on the hardwood, and we will begin with the Emory Spartans. Despite a 42-point performance from Kyson Stilson, Emory suffered an 85-76 loss to the Manti Templars on the road, dipping to 4-5 in region play. Emory led throughout the entire second half, never trailing. But it was Manti's Adam Huff that knocked down a 25-foot three-point shot with only 5 seconds remaining in regulation that sent the game into overtime. From that point on, Manti dominated, scoring 9 of the first 11 points of the extra period and outscoring Emory 16-7 over the final 4 minutes. Again, despite the loss, Kyson Stilson poured in his third 40-point game of the season as he finished with 42 points and shot close to 70% from the field while knocking down 4 three-point shots. Brax Jensen finished with 12 points and Cade Brazier chipped in with 8. Manti had parity throughout the offense. Adam Huff scored 28 points. He knocked down 3 shots from beyond the arc. Travis Thompson finished with 19 and Grady Thompson scored 15. Emory will have an opportunity to get back to 500 in region play when they return to the court tomorrow to take on the North St. Pete Hawks. As it sits right now, North St. Pete is the only team winless in the Region 15 division. Live coverage of that contest will begin at 6:30 p.m. with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show, followed by tip-off at 7. We move over to Carbon High School, and last night the Dinos earned a 63-48 victory over Mazer Prep. This contest took place on the road. Carbon led 30-19 at the end of the first half, and they outscored Mazer Prep in the next 2 quarters to pick up a 63-48 win. Carbon was led by Derek Hillam, who scored 30 points, 18 of which came from beyond the three-point line. Colin Lewis and Ty Anderson both chipped in with 12. Now, last night's contest was the only game of the week for Carbon. They will take a bye on Friday before returning to the court next Wednesday and Friday to wrap up the regular season. As it sits right now, Carbon is currently in 5th place in Region 14 with a record of 4-6. Below them, it's Mazer Prep at 1-8 and ALA at 1-9, solidifying Carbon's spot in the upcoming state championship tournament in the next 2 weeks. We move over to junior college athletics, and tonight it is Fan Appreciation Night at the BDAC, so make sure you come on out and support the USU Eastern Eagles. All of the action will begin at 5:30 p.m. as the Lady Eagles take the court against Salt Lake Community College. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by assistant coach Morgan Warburton-Nelson, and she talked about how the team has performed most recently, picking up a win over Colorado Northwestern, ending a two-game slide.
More so, just our confidence is back. We're playing more as a team. You know, we had a little bit of a breakdown there against Salt Lake and snow this past round. Not necessarily being selfish, but not really thinking team-oriented, running our plays the way we need to run them, hitting the open person. So we really got back to that the last couple weeks in practice as far as, you know, we're making the next pass. We have that mentality.
Coach Warburton also talked about the team performing in front of the hometown crowd on Fan Appreciation Night, which is definitely the highest capacity they will see throughout the year.
Really, it helps for all those listening. We need everybody that is available and wants to come and don't just come to the men's game. I mean, I know it's fun and exciting, and so is our women's game. And Salt Lake's one of the best teams in the country right now. And we're hoping that, you know, with the fans on our side this time, that we can get the job done. And I really believe this team has the capability.
Immediately following the women's contest, the men will take the court. They've already beat Salt Lake once this year, scoring an 87-86 win just a couple of weeks ago. Again, admission is free. There will also be free food and tons of giveaways tonight. It's Fan Appreciation Night at the BDAC. And we end by moving over to the national sports front, where today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll be joined by former New York Giant, two-time Super Bowl champion Leonard Marshall. This continues the countdown to Super Bowl 53. Marshall played under Bill Parcells and also Bill Belichick during his time in New York. That'll be today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, and you'll also hear from USU Eastern men's coach Aljama Pacelli and assistant coach Ray Jones Jr. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Thursday edition of the Coach's Corner, right here on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We've talked a lot of basketball. It's the heart of basketball season on the local sports front. Last night, we had two basketball games on Castle Country Radio. And then tonight, we got two more coming up for you right here on KOAL. Beginning at 5 p.m., live pregame coverage will begin. The USU Eastern Lady Eagles taking on Salt Lake Community College. And immediately after, the men will take the court as they go toe-to-toe with Salt Lake for the second time this year. Joining us in the studio right now to talk about that, we have Coach Vando and Coach Ray Jones Jr. And guys, it's always a pleasure to get you in. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for having us.
Great to be here, Jordan.
It's always great to talk to you guys, that's for sure. Unfortunately, we got to start by talking about a loss this past Saturday, Coach. We go on the road to Rangeley, Colorado and fall 85-70. You know, when I take a look at Colorado this year, it's no secret, this is a much better team. And we were talking off of the cuff, just from a spectator standpoint, I look at Colorado, they just look the part physically. And we know they have a couple of shooters. We saw that and we talked about that last week. It's a team that can be dangerous for a lot of schools, and unfortunately, we were one of those schools that fell victim.
Oh yeah, so they played really well against us, you know. Like and before that, you know, they had Slick, you know, Salt Lake, you know, they were up 6 points with 50 seconds to go, but you know they end the loss, you know, in a overtime by four, I think. So you know they're pretty good, you know, they can shoot the ball. Like, you know, I used to say they have nothing to lose, you know. Like, they play loose and they run, you know. They have some guys, like, you know, some, like, a really, really quick guys and shooters. And then, like, we played, you know, I think, like, really flat, you know. Like, we came flat and suddenly, like, you know, during the game we have, like, a times that say, hey, like, let's play, and then we play and we go up like 8-9 points, and then, you know, start playing flat again. I think, like, we had, you know, like the wrong approach, you know, on these guys, and they took advantage on us, you know. Like, they deserve to win, you know. I'm not saying that, you know, we deserve to win the game. They play much better than us. And we could not defend them. And then, like, we got frustrated because, you know, we could not defend. And it got frustrated, went to the offense and didn't do, you know, our what we're supposed to do, like move the ball and put ourselves in, you know, in our offense system. We just play hoops like them. And that's their game. You know, they took advantage on that. We had, a poor night of shooting. And they scored easy in transition, and they deserve to win the game.
Coach Jones, we did talk about this last week as well. Sluggish shooting from beyond the arc, and that kind of carried over into this game as well. Wasn't good against Snow, wasn't good against Colorado. Colorado did. They hit a couple of very big three-point shots in the game, and I know it's a very simplistic stat, but at the same time, 6 of 28 from downtown. I mean, that's not good, once again.
No, it's not. I mean, the name of the game is put the ball in the hole, and that's something we struggled with from the arc. But like we said, man, you can attribute some of that to bad shot placement. You can attribute to, whatever it is, bad passings that lead to shots. We watched film the other day, and we showed the guys how some of their passes are bad. They don't lead to good shooters. You know, they always say good shooting teams are also good passing teams. And so at times that's a problem. So we're just trying to correct things. We're still afloat. You know, the ship is still moving full speed ahead. And we'll just try to correct it and make shots tonight.
Hey, Coach, when I hear you talk about bad shot selection and bad shot timing, I can't help but think of a baseball stat. I mean, you're familiar with the game of baseball. I'm familiar with the game of baseball. A quality at bat. Now, a quality at bat doesn't necessarily mean you get a base hit. Doesn't necessarily mean you get a walk or you get hit by a pitch. It just means you made the pitcher work. That's kind of what I get in my mind when you're talking about this. We didn't have any quality offensive possessions. Didn't mean it necessarily needed to result in a basket, just a quality offensive possession where you look at it and you say, I can live with that.
Yeah, 100%. And that's a great, great analogy. I mean, that you can even hear quotes like, hey, pass up a good shot for a great shot. Things like that, those all attribute to shot selection. And we struggle with that at times. And a lot of that can be from some people trying to press the matter, and you can let it come to you. That's the thing. If somebody creates for me and I take a great shot, I'm going to high five them on the way down, slap them on the butt, say, great, great pass. That's your bucket, boy. Good job. And that's how this game can be played. And so I think we need to get a few more of those type of plays.
And, I think that was happening the first three games of conference play.
It was, absolutely. The team knows. I think Vando called a blaze over yesterday at practice, and then even he said the guys were confident. But we also know we just need to get back to how we were playing before. I mean, that was when we were at our best, and I think they will.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Jones and Coach Vando of the USU Eastern men's basketball team. Coach Vando, I'll come to you with this. Tonight, Salt Lake Community College, last time these two teams went toe-to-toe. It was a fun one, picked up an 87-86 win in Salt Lake. Does that confidence kind of carry over into this game, this team knowing, look, we already beat these guys on the road. We should beat these guys on the on our home floor.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, this game is going to be crucial. Like a Slick, you know, comes with a 20 points, you know, loss to Snow, and this game is like a must win for them. You know, they come in and throwing on us everything that they got. You know, because, you know, they cannot lose this game at all. And then, you know, on the other hand, you know, we came like two losses, you know, and then we want to get back in track and win it again. So I think it's going to be a good game, and I used to say, you know, we have a good matchup with them, and the guys, you know, practice, you know, good during this week, you know, their confidence again, like, you know, Coach John said that we watch film with them, and they saw what they did wrong, and we correct some stuff. And the confidence is back. So it's just, you know, like a matters like we got to go to the court and put, you know, together, you know, what we've been working on, and they got to execute. I think we have a great chance to win. I think so. So, you know, the guys want to win. So, you know, this game really, really bad. And then, like, we want to you know, beat these guys tonight and go Saturday to Snow and get our revenge.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go to Coach Jones. Coach, in that first game with Salt Lake, Cam Mack was held to 12 points. I think he was like 5 of 20 from the field, missed a couple of foul shots. To me, that was key. I mean, they still scored 86 points, but Cam was really a non-factor in that game. What did you guys do defensively that worked on him in that first outing?
With the players like Cam, who are obviously really, really good, really good players, you just try to slow them down. You try to limit them. If you can call them weaknesses, you try to find them and exploit them the best you can. He's a really good facilitator. It's something I don't think he gets enough credit for, and he does that by getting in the paint because he's super quick. He's very fast. One place that we say maybe we can give up is maybe his outside shooting. If he can make him shoot, you know, 6 or 7 threes, and he misses, 4 or 5 of them, we can live with that, so we just try to limit something from him. But he's a good player. So when he gets other guys involved and he can get himself involved, then he's dangerous. When he leaves a game with 14, 10, and 8, it's scary, So I think we're just trying to limit the amount of outside threes he can hit. His paint touches.
Yeah, again, he was kind of a non-factor offensively. It was Henson that made the big difference offensively in this last game. He went for 25, if I remember right. So, looking at the Salt Lake team, they got a variety of different ways they can beat you.
They do. And so that's why you got to play for 40 minutes. And that's something I think we preach to these guys end on end. It's 40 minutes of basketball. This isn't high school anymore where you can blow a team out and you're just going to sit and be like, are we good? No, you're gonna take 12 rounds of straight haymakers, jabs, and hooks. All, and if you slip once, you're on the canvas. That's the way that we look at this thing. So 40 minutes, and give us 40 good minutes, and we'll be fine.
Coach Vando, it is Fan Appreciation Night tonight. We've had a lot of success on Fan Appreciation Night. The gym is typically rocking. It's free admission for everyone, so you got to make sure you come out and give the Eagles the home court advantage that they deserve. Free food, giveaways, all kinds of great stuff. It's a fun night. I know Snow hates it, so Coach Nielsen gets a break this year because he hates it. There's a reason why he hates it. It's tough to win on Fan Appreciation Night at the BDAC.
Oh yeah, so that's a special night, the gym is packed, the fans are there and supporting us and the women team. We've been successful every single, year that, we have that Fan Appreciation Night against Snow.
Yeah.
But, like I said, the guys are very, very excited, for the game tonight, and they are very excited, to see, people over there and cheering for us. Like I said, it's the most important game, at the season for us right now. I think the most important game for the league too. Like I said, it's gonna be a battle. It's going, Coach John said, we need to play 40 minutes of good basketball, and I think we have a great chance to beat them. And I hope that the people who comes tonight and watch our team and the women, and that we both could win and have a perfect a Fan Appreciation Night.
Yeah, I can't stress this enough. You get to see high-level JUCO basketball for free. The game is played above the rim the entire time as far as the men's contest goes. We're talking about top-notch athletes here, and you don't get that opportunity to come out for free very often. And it's not that far off from the conference tournament, which is also here at the BDAC, and we're going to be talking about that, I know, relatively soon. So, Coach, it's a great opportunity for the people to come out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I hope that you guys, come tonight enjoying the game, enjoying the food. And, it's like, Jordan said, it's a free admission. I hope that we can, present you guys with, 2 wins. And one thing for sure, we're gonna leave, everything that we have, on the court. I promise that, we're gonna play real, real hard, and we're gonna try to beat Sleek, in everything that, in our power.
Coach, I really appreciate you taking out the time to stop by. Coach Jones, you as well. It's always so much fun to talk with you guys. Sometimes I enjoy the conversation off the air a lot more than I do on the air. So I appreciate you guys stopping by once again. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, thank you so much, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Always great to get Coach Jones and Coach Vando in the studio to talk USU Eastern basketball. We got a break for just a moment. We're continuing to count down the days to Super Bowl 53, which will air live right here on KOAL Sunday. Live coverage at noon, kickoff at 4:30. Yesterday, we talked to former Los Angeles Rams quarterback Jim Everett. Today, we'll be joined by 2-time Super Bowl champion and former New York Giant defensive end Leonard Marshall. He's best known for basically ending Joe Montana's career in San Francisco while winning 2 Super Bowls under Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick, who was the defensive coordinator of those squads. I'm looking forward to that. It's coming up next. Leonard Marshall will join us right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, continuing the countdown to Super Bowl 53. We got another great guest joining us today. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion. He spent 11 years in the NFL. He spent the majority of his time with the New York Giants playing defensive end from 1983 to 1992. Spent 1 year with the New York Jets and 1 year with the Washington Redskins. He's a two-time Super Bowl champ and a two-time Pro Bowl selection. He is Leonard Marshall joining us on the phone right now. Leonard, a pleasure to get you on today. Thank you.
You're quite welcome, sir. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So whenever I say the name Leonard Marshall, it's kind of synonymous with the 1990 NFC Championship game. I guess that's a great place to start with this conversation. That's what you're most known for. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Your hit on Joe Montana in that contest that kind of changed the course of history. I'm sure you get that a lot, right?
Well, I get it quite a bit. You know, and the one thing that people like to reflect upon is the fact that they were going for a three-peat that day, and it was a chance and opportunity for them to play for a third championship 3 years in a row, and we were the ones that were looking to knock them off the block a little bit.
You guys did play the 49ers earlier that season, and we'll talk a little bit more about that particular hit, but you lose to San Francisco in the regular season. I believe the final score was 7-3. You get a second crack at them in the NFC Championship, and I guess the coach that is relevant to Super Bowl 53 is the fact that Bill Belichick is your defensive coordinator during that 1990 season. What did you learn about San Francisco, and what do you remember about the preparation going into the NFC title game?
I remember the first time we played them that we weren't really in full throttle position. I mean, we had some players that were recovering from injury. We didn't have all our ducks in a row. And, you know, I was a guy who wasn't really implemented in the lineup at that time. Even though we were 10-0, you know, Parcells was trying to teach me a lesson, more or less, from holding out in training camp. By not letting me start the first play of the game and really get my juices flowing and get my my timing down and in terms of really getting into the game. So I had to be a player that came off the bench and made plays like that coming off the bench. So the second time that we played them, we had a bad taste in our mouth because we lost the first game 7-3 in their park, on their turf. And but yet, we didn't have all our ducks in a row. The second time we played them, we made sure that we went there with everything in our arsenal, and we didn't want to leave anything to be left unturned. We wanted to make sure that when we left there, we left victorious, and if we didn't leave victorious, that it would more or less be a body bag game where either they knocked us out or we knocked them out.
Well, you definitely delivered a knockout in that particular contest. What do you remember about the play where you not only knocked Joe Montana out of the game? It's basically, that was the last time Joe Montana ever started in a San Francisco 49er uniform, kind of changing the course of history, as you mentioned, making sure there was no three-peat. The Niners would not go to three straight Super Bowls. Leonard, what do you remember about that play specifically?
Well, I slipped, you know, the ball snapped, and I'm eyeing the football, so I can get a jump on the pass rush in the situation, especially being the weak side defensive end in the scheme of our defense, and the guy who most quarterbacks feared. I wanted to make sure that I got a good jump off the ball, and the grass was so thick, candlestick, and the field was wet. Seemed like it wet the field before the game, so I lost my footing on the snap of the football. Then next thing I know, there's a guy diving at my feet, trying to take my knees out, pretty much cut me down, and I end up crawling. And as I end up crawling, trying to get there, I look up, and he still got the football. The next thing I know, he extends his left hand to tell Jerry Rice to continue running. And as I've seen him extend that left hand, I said, okay, if I don't leave my feet and separate him from the football, they're going to score a touchdown here. The game's over. So I leave my feet, I dive. The next thing you know, I separate him from the football. Now, Mark Collins ended up whiffing the football. But I was hoping that it was one of those glamorous plays where You know, LT catches the ball in the air, running in for a touchdown, and we put the game completely out of reach.
That obviously didn't happen, but the defense did make a big play. And sometimes I feel like your hit on Joe Montana takes away from the fact that you guys had to force a turnover late in that game to get a victory, and you did.
Well, we forced a turnover, and we ran a trick play on a fourth down with Gary Reed, as we faked the punt. And they had 10 men on the field, and we had everybody accounted for. We had practiced that play all week long because we knew if we had a chance to run a fake field goal on them or a fake punt on them, that we would take the shot to do it. And just so happened, we were at the plus, I think we were at the minus 45-yard line. And Gary decides to run a fake. He calls it perfect. And they run a counter play right up the middle, and he goes for, like, I think 27 yards. It puts us in field goal range for Matt Barney to kick a field goal, which became the game-winning field goal.
Following that game, you guys go right into the Super Bowl. There wasn't 2 weeks in between games like there is today. When you knock off the San Francisco 49ers at Candlestick, you end their quest to go on a three-peat. The momentum, I'm sure, that you guys accumulated from that game was nearly unstoppable going into the Super Bowl against the Buffalo Bills.
Well, we knew we were believers at that point. I mean, we knew we were the better team, and you know, we knew that from the loss that we received in the season when we were 10-0. You know, to go back home 5 hours, think about that game all the way home 5 hours, and now you're 10-1. Well, we want to make damn sure that we get another shot at those guys. And we said amongst ourselves, we were the better team today, just that the better team didn't win. But if we get a shot, whether we get a shot in our place or their place, we're going to make sure we take advantage of it. And just so happened, we go on the road and we beat them in their park, and it was a convincing win. I mean, it was a 5 field goal game for us. And, you know, even though they scored a touchdown, a field goal, it was a 5 field goal game for us. We knew that we weren't going to leave it in the minds of our fans, that we weren't the better football team that day.
Again, we're being joined right now by Leonard Marshall, former defensive end in the NFL. Played 10 years with the New York Giants, won 2 Super Bowls. Leonard, this is something I've always wondered. Defensively, you guys were so good in that game, in the 1990 NFC Championship, but it comes down to Matt Barr kicking a field goal. And if we go to the Super Bowl, it's kind of a similar situation where you guys win on a missed field goal. So for someone who has done their part, and I know there's 3 elements to football, offense, defense, and special teams, but when you have done your part and the game is no longer in your hands with everything riding on it, how nerve-wracking is it to be on the sideline during that situation?
Well, it's extremely nerve-wracking. But today's football, you know, is a lot different than football was back when I played. When I played, the games were defensive struggles. When I played, they weren't these high-powered offenses. Teams scoring 45 and 50 points a game. That was unheard of. You know, we wouldn't allow that as a defensive football team. We wouldn't allow it. And they didn't throw the ball as much as they throw the ball now. Now, you know, the ball's in the air, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 times a game now, you know, versus the ball being run, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 times in the course of a game. So, as a matter of fact, you know, Bill Parcells had a motto: if we can run the ball in November, we can win in December. And that's because your running game gears up between September and October, and then in November you really get it going the right way, and in December you just begin to dominate people. And that's what we did as an offensive football team. We hit you with a strong running attack and a quarterback who couldn't lose the game. We didn't ask him to win it, but we just asked him not to lose it.
Leonard, you were a part of 2 Super Bowl championship squads, Super Bowl 25, and again the 20-19 win over the Buffalo Bills, but also Super Bowl 21 and a 39-20 win over the Denver Broncos. Which one means more to you? I don't know if that's a stupid question or not, but does one mean a little bit more when you look back on your career?
Well, you know, both games mean an awful lot. I mean, I got a chance to play with opposite 2 of the greatest linebackers to play the game. Both guys are in the Hall of Fame. I'm very proud of that, because I had a lot to do with their success as well as they had with mine, and that's Harry Carson and Lawrence Taylor. So the fact that I got a chance to watch Harry Carson walk out as a winner the last couple of years of his career, and I get a chance to win 2 championships with the greatest football player to play opposite me and play for the in Lawrence Taylor, you know, one of the greatest things I have to look back on in my career. Hopefully one day I'll get a chance to sit around and tell my grandkids a story about that guy and some of the things that I witnessed that he could do, not only on the football field, but the quality of person and the quality of man that he's become now that football is over for him, for both of us, really.
I think when you look back on the history books, the 1990 New York Giants, I mean, they got to be looked upon as one of the greatest teams, definitely one of the most historical teams as well. I did mention Bill Belichick, your defensive coordinator. Now Bill Belichick is going for his unbelievable 9 times this guy has gone to the Super Bowl as a head coach. What do you remember about playing for Bill Belichick as your DC?
His attention to detail. His attention to detail and his eye for talent was unbelievable. And the fact that he made sure that, you know, he didn't leave a stone unturned in terms of preparation, game plan, and execution. He demanded a lot, and we tried to give him a lot. And as a football player, he challenged me every day to be better than my best, week in and week out. And I think that's the thing that he carries with him to New England. You know, I hear stories from players all the time, but he's always in the locker room talking about, when I coached Leonard Marshall, he did this. When I coached Lawrence Taylor, he did this. When I coached Harry Carson, he did this. This is how I want you to do it. You know, and I've heard this from Jarvis Green. I've heard this from Henry Thomas. I've heard this from Willie McGinnis. I've heard this from several players. And they all say that, you know, he can never get away from his first 2 championships, which was with guys like myself and the men that I mentioned. And I think that that's what really shaped his career and his life in football was the times he had in New York. Every time I watch the Chronicles of Bill, the two Bills, I watch him walking in and out of the Giants locker room with tears in his eyes because, you know, he really wanted, to be honest with you, I think he really wanted to do all the things that he's doing now in New England. He wanted to do them in Big Blue here in New York and give these people what he always wanted to give them, which is, you know, a successful organization, one that he can look back on in his legacy and say, you know, look at the house that the two Bills built together.
Leonard, there's so much more I would love to talk to you about. However, I got a break for a quick commercial. Any way you can hang around and do one more segment with us?
You got it. You got it.
It's excellent. We have more coming up with former New York Giant and 2-time Super Bowl champion Leonard Marshall when we return on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, continuing a conversation with our current guest, Leonard Marshall, former defensive end in the NFL, played for the New York Giants from 1983 to 1992, also had short stints with the New York Jets and the Washington Redskins. Leonard, you did mention playing among two of the greatest linebackers in the history of the game, one being Lawrence Taylor. That's always a name that's going to be synonymous with defensive football in the NFL. What was it like playing with someone like Taylor, who was a kind of an innovator from that position, someone that dominated on the field, and of course, as you mentioned, you had a big part of that playing on the defensive line. What's it like helping someone with the ability of Lawrence Taylor?
Well, you know, his will and his ability to take his team and put his team on his back and carry them over the hurdle, whatever hurdle they could try to overcome, was just amazing. I mean, you know, his intensity was amazing. His team speed and his gift to the club was unmeasured. And I think the greatest talent that Lawrence had was he didn't speak it. He just did it. And that's what I liked about him, and that's what I enjoyed doing with him and playing, you know, opposite him, is the fact that he didn't talk about it, he just overthought it. And, you know, those memories are very fond memories. I mean, I can remember beating the Redskins 3 times the same season, you know, the Giants having a ticket tape parade in the stadium after the game because Bear Koch wouldn't give us a ticket tape parade in Manhattan. So, you know, he wanted to make damn sure that we made a mark in New York that fans would never forget, and, you know, the organization would never forget, and it would be synonymous with, you know, the great teams of the 80s that we put on the field and that won those championships.
Leonard, I remember talking to Fran Tarkenton not that long ago, and there's a quarterback that had a lot of success but never won a Super Bowl, and he said great players should be judged on their performance on the field, not on how many championships they won. If I go back over the course of your career, I mean, 1985 was probably your best season statistically. You had almost 16 sacks. You had 99 tackles that year. But if we go to that 1990 season, where you guys did win a Super Bowl, the 1991 season, in your mind, what means more? Statistically, your best season, one of your best seasons statistically, or winning a Super Bowl in your mind?
I think a combination of both. I mean, you know, During the course of my career, I played 3 Pro Bowls. I'm all NFL 4 times. I'm Defensive Lineman of the Year twice. You know, I'm MVP of the team 3 times. I'm playing with the greatest, 2 of the greatest linebackers to play the game, in Taylor and Carson. And I don't want to forget that other guy, number 58, who raised a lot of hell on the opposite end of our defense, and Carl Banks. So, you know, I think the thing that means the most to me right now, as I sit back and look back upon things, is the front 7 we played with was incredible. The front 7 we played with will never be fieldable again in the National Football League. Teams just couldn't afford to do it. And the 4 guys that played behind us were just amazing as well. I mean, Mark Collins, Kenny Hill, Terry Kennard, Perry Williams, Craig Jackson, Myrick Guyton. I could just go on and on. Herbie Welch. I can go on and on and on about those guys. They were not only great men and great players, but they were extremely good men in the locker room. Good guys to have on your ball club.
You definitely had a stellar career. If we go back to the 1989 season, you're on record of saying that the loss to the Los Angeles Rams in the playoffs was gut-wrenching because you felt like that team, your Giants squad, was the best team in the league. Again, we have a great highlight from that particular game with Flipper Anderson running through the tunnel. Does that count as the most gut-wrenching loss of your career?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I ended up buying a home in Florida right after the season ended. Because that was such a gut-wrenching loss. I ended up buying a house in Florida. Then in the off-season, part of the off-season, a huge part of the off-season in Florida, because I just couldn't take coming back here facing the fans, knowing that we were a better football team. And that 89 team should have won a championship, to be honest with you. That's how good it was.
Yeah, anytime you have a one-and-done tournament, I've asked this several times to professional athletes, how often does the best team actually win the Super Bowl when it's a one-and-done type tournament?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I always think about that. I always think about what if, you know, and then I go back to one of those Bill Parcells analogies. You know, in terms of what if, he would always say, well, if a frog had wings, it wouldn't bump his butt before he landed. I'm like, okay, I'll have to use that someday.
Leonard, what's the biggest difference about playing for Bill Parcells compared to Bill Belichick, if you had to differentiate the two?
Both guys were intense. One guy was more attention to detail than the other. Both fierce competitors. One guy was a motivator. Then the guy was the guy who just thought of it, and he'd tell you how he wanted it, and he expected you to deliver it that way. I think that's the difference between the two Bills. But one guy taught me toughness. One guy taught me what integrity was in the game, and to believe in what you see and not what you hear, and hit everything that's in your area. And I think that's the biggest thing that I took back in the game. Is I took a little different old Dublin, combined it into one thing and made it work for me.
If someone would have told you that back in your playing days, if someone would have told you that Bill Belichick would go down as one of the greatest football coaches in the history of the game, would that have surprised you?
No, it wouldn't have surprised me. As a matter of fact, I told people some 10, 15 years ago that they're going to end up changing that award and calling it the Belichick Award instead of the Lombardi Award, because I thought that he would change the face of the game, and he's actually showing you that. I mean, I can't think of any coach with 9 Super Bowl rings ever. As a matter of fact, they're going to end up reshaping the trophy because of this guy.
Yeah, I don't think you could really argue with that. I mean, the fact is that we'll never see a dynasty like this again. I know there's a lot of people out there that hate the New England Patriots, but I'm constantly telling them, Leonard, you have to appreciate what we're seeing, because I don't think we're ever going to see anything like this again.
Everybody hates a winner. Everybody hates a winner. It's always like that, you know. And I'm, you know, it's sad, but it is what it is, and that's just the way the world works, you know. I hear people now telling me, you know, I'm tired of seeing Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. If you're tired of seeing him in the Super Bowl, help your team get better.
Yeah. I got to ask you a question about rivalries before we wrap things up. You played for the New York Giants from 83 to 92. You ended your career as a member of the Washington Redskins in 1994. Was that difficult to put on a Redskin jersey after everything you had been through in New York with the Giants?
My greatest regret in my career is I'm 8-3. I'm playing defensive tackle for the New York Jets. I'm completely out of my element. I'm playing a brand new position. I'm replacing a great defensive lineman for the Jets in Dennis Byrd, who got injured the season before, and it was a career-ending injury. And we're 8-3. I break my forearm in December. The Jets go on to lose the last remaining ball games of the season, and they miss the playoffs. I wanted to win for Leon S. so bad because the man treated me with like gold. When I joined the organization, they rolled out the red carpet, and I'm telling you, all the way through the development of that football team and trying to help Bruce Cosman and Pete Carroll and a young defensive coordinator and a young defensive line coach and Greg Robinson really put a good team on the field that could compete in the AFC East. That's my greatest regret, that I couldn't win for Leon S. I didn't give that man an opportunity to win.
When people look back on your football career, are you okay with the idea that you're remembered by the hit on Joe Montana? Are you okay with that?
I am. I mean, it's part of my career and my legacy in football. So I kind of am. I'm saddened that, you know, the impact of the play had the profound effect on his career that it did. But yet, you know, it's part of the game and nature of the beast. So, and I understand that, and I'm quite sure he does. And I've seen Joe several times, and, you know, I've said things to him that, you know, to pretty much let him know that, you know, I am sensitive to it. I feel horrible for what happened. However, you know, it's the nature of the beast. I mean, you know, it's part of the deal. So, and he understands that, and a lot of his teammates do as well. So, you know, one thing I do look back on that, very proud of is the men that I lined up with and I played with. That they're all still men, and none of them are in jail and having all kinds of problems and all kinds of health issues. Many of them are doing well. We're still as close as ever, the 86 team guys and the 19 guys, and that means an awful lot.
Last question before I let you go, Leonard. How much do you pay attention to the NFL game today? And with that, I got to go in for your Super Bowl prediction for Super Bowl 53.
I mean, I watch. I'm a fan. I love some of the young guys, the characters that are in the game. They now allow you to dance and do all your craziness when you score now and you make big plays and all that stuff. They kind of took that part of the game from us back when I was playing, but now they're allowing that back in the game, and I think it's colorful. And I think it's entertainment for the fans, and I like the fact that they do that. You know, in terms of the game, my team was a team that got pushed out, New Orleans. I'm a Saints fan. You know, I'm from New Orleans, so from that area. And, you know, was rooting hard for the Saints, hoping that Drew Brees made it and got a chance to go to the big show again. But unfortunately, his team is not in it this year. So, if he's not in it, I got no other thing to do than other than root for Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. So my prediction is New England by 7.
I can't wait to see what Bill Belichick has for this Rams defensive line, because you being a former defensive end, I'm sure you can appreciate the fact that New England's going up against Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald, Michael Brockers, and Dante Fowler. It's a lethal front four.
I'm dying to see what he does against that high-powered offense. I mean, if you go back and look at what we did playing a high-powered offense in Buffalo Bills, we played 2 defensive linemen, 5 linebackers, and 4 defensive backs. Against the Bills, and we dared them to throw the football. We continued the running game to Thurman Thomas. In fact, Thurman Thomas had 130, 40, 50 yards in the game. But we made sure we took away the deep ball, the deep throw, and the passing lanes for Jim Kelly. So they didn't beat us with the big deep end cuts and the long ball plays. We made them throw the ball short, dump it off, and then make sure we tackle a guy in bounds. So it's going to be interesting to see how he game plans against this high-powered Rams offense and whether or not he let Todd Gurley run the football or not.
Absolutely. Leonard Marshall, again, it's such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for the time. And enjoy Super Bowl 53. It was a pleasure to hear some of your memories.
I'll do my best. Thank you very much.
Again, that's two-time Super Bowl champ Leonard Marshall joining us on Drive Time Sports. We are out of time. Do not forget, tomorrow we have a huge show. We'll be joined by New England Patriot running back James White, also backup quarterback Brian Hoyer, and Denver Bronco all-time great Steve Atwater. That's coming up on Drive Time Sports tomorrow. Be safe. I'm out.